you see a company like Apple, marketing for them is not about, oh, the great ad that you made. 1984 commercial, which they made after that, you haven't seen an Apple ad which is transformational in advertising history. For the brand, what is the audience exactly? Like e-commerce website, what reviews they are talking about. Then we will crunch 12,000-13,000 reviews together and use AI to come with the commonalities of that audience.
As a digital marketing agency owner, this is like Prabhuji aapke charan ka moment for me.
People who are good in an agency ecosystem which is growing start their career at 4 lakh per annum. Between 5 to 7 years, they will be more than 10x of that earning per annum. As freelancers, last year we were give or take 200 crores. What we are projecting this year, 250.
1.3 years. That's the average tenure of a Shebang employee as per LinkedIn.
So most people leave because of compensation related issues. We started doing two or three things which have helped. First is we use an AI called...
They've been running agency for 7 years or 8 years or 10 years. Most of the agency owners are stuck in their journey. How they can scale up to the next level. Welcome to my podcast, Grow Your Influence. This is Saurabh Jain, and I'm super excited today because we are doing something new in this podcast series. We have with us Mr. Harshal Karia. He is the CEO of Shebang, one of the leading digital marketing agencies of India. I run a digital marketing agency myself. It's called Ecome. It's almost 12 years old agency, and I know it's such a big challenge to run a digital marketing agency. In this podcast, you will learn about how did Shebang became one of the leading digital marketing agencies of India, the entrepreneurship journey, and a lot of deep insights that you will find nowhere else. So what are you waiting for? Go ahead and watch this podcast entirely. And whenever you feel that you got some crazy value bomb, do share what was your biggest takeaway in the comment section of this particular podcast. Harshal, it's such an honor to host you for my show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And you have been one of my biggest inspirations as a digital marketing agency owner. So today, I'm going to dig deeper into understanding your thought process with respect to career in digital marketing, how to run an agency. So are you all set?
Yes, very excited.
Super. So my first question to you is, in the year 2024, in the space of digital marketing, what are some of the key skills that you take into consideration when hiring a candidate?
Key skills that we need to take into place, one is the core skill of creativity, which stands true anyway. So I think in any kind of marketing, you need to be able to write good copy. You need to be able to, you know, communicate the message well. So that's one key skill. Second is, so creativity. Second is clarity, which is that if you have a strategic problem, then how clear can you get to the solution? You know, how distilled is your thinking? So that's the second skill, creativity, clarity. Third being consumer. So how much effort you take to understand the consumer of the client that you are being entrusted with. So, you know, most of us live in our new, like, kind of tunnel. So we have tunnel thinking. So we don't understand consumers well. So if you have to market to a SECB mom sitting in Raipur, how well do you know that consumer? How good is your ability to know the consumer? So creativity.
Then
clarity. Third is consumer. And the fourth is how well you can converge all of the new things that are coming, like AI, you know, marketing automation. So how well can you converge different things that are on the table? Those are the four skills that I would look for.
Amazing. Good one there. What do you think is the future of digital marketing? This is the most common question that I get from everyone on the internet.
Yeah. So the future of digital marketing is we are moving towards, so two things are becoming very, very clear. One is that if you see a company like Apple, marketing for them is not about, oh, the great ad that you made, the 1984 commercial which they made after that, you haven't seen an Apple ad which is transformational in advertising history. But what they are is very, very tight across every communication touch point. So they are tight, they are consistent, they are clear, and they have, again, clear standards which they adhere to. So, you know, you look at the emailer, you'll open it, you'll know it's Apple. You look at a banner ad, you'll know it's Apple. You look at a place in the airport, you'll know it's Apple. So reliability and clarity across multiple touch points is what is today strong marketing, because consumers want to buy a brand that they aspire to, and they want to buy a brand that they, you know, they know is predictable. So now what the future is moving towards is more and more tailor-made experiences for Saurav or for Harshal, that this brand in its messaging speaks to me one-on-one for me to be able to talk to it and, you know, to be able to buy into it.
Right.
So that might involve a personalized emailer journey for Saurav. It might involve a personalized banner journey for Saurav. It might involve a personalized remarketing journey. You know, all of the journeys that we talk about are
personalized
to each person. Personalized means that, but like it's really customized to each person. But with the codes and consistency of what the brand stands for. So you don't lose the
value.
Yeah, you don't lose the value, you don't lose the core, but you are hyper-personal to every person. So that, I think, is where marketing is moving towards. And all of these things with respect to AI, with respect to, you know, marketing automation meets AI, all of those things are allowing us to do that one-on-one.
Right. So you think that there is a lot of, still, though it's very competitive, you see that this is the right time to build a career in digital marketing.
Yeah, I think digital marketing as a career, I think it's definitely, I see only more demand for it. I think also, you know, that there are two paths to the digital marketing side. You know, of course, there's a lot of work in the market with respect to maturity around funnels, analytics, you know, making sure that there is a good conversion journey. So those are very, very important skills. Now, all of these skills are building on top of those skills. And, you know, again, let me quote a stat to you. There are, in 2022, you had close to 300,000 new advertisers enter India, Indian advertising ecosystem, through Google AdWords. Now, that means you have 3 lakh new clients entering the market. All of them are going to need some kind of hand-holding. You know, they're going to need some kind of, you know, like, what should I actually do? So these are the people that are entering the marketplace. So definitely there are more and more advertisers entering the market. Economy is growing, so the cost per advertiser spend is increasing. So I think next 10, 15 years is a good time to be in this market.
Super. AI can destroy someone's career in digital marketing. This is a myth or fact according to you?
I think AI can, if you don't use AI, it can destroy your career in digital marketing, because now the amount of data that we are dealing with, to be able to synthesize that data is a very important skill. So as basic as using GPT-4 for saying that I have a very complex Excel sheet and just give me some analysis on top of that, to, you know, looking at building a Power BI dashboard which is real time giving you analytics on the media campaign that you are running, or to be able to create a red flag system on where you may overspend or underspend. You know, those are the ways in which you can do more using the same two hands. So if you are not able to do it, but the people next to you are able to utilize AI well, then it will kill your career.
True. So basically, do AI or you don't exist.
Not that you don't exist, but you're going to be at a significant disadvantage.
Right. Makes sense. Digital marketing freelancing culture is becoming instantly popular. What would be your advice to those young folks starting on their own?
As freelancers, look, I think it's a tough question, this one. We are moving to a market which is, you know, where definitely you have the ability to either work in an agency or you have the ability to be a freelancer. I think both have their pros and cons in terms of what it does for your career. So let's take an example of the agency ecosystem. People who are good in an agency ecosystem which is growing can actually accelerate their earning quite well as well. And so to give you an example, there are people who I worked with in a span of, you know, they may start their career at 4 lakh per annum, and in a span of between 5 to 7 years, they will be more than 10x of that earning per annum. So you have the kind of like the framework to grow, and you have the consistency from an earning potential. Freelance, also you can build a very, very strong career. You have a good set of clients, you could build that out. If you don't have your own systems and you don't have, you know, kind of the ability, it's fine.
The discipline,
you don't have your systems and you don't have access to the clients. And if your skill level is not at that level where you are playing with the biggest clients, then it's ultimately what you want to optimize for in your career. Do you want to optimize for the agency ecosystem or a large agency ecosystem will solve for large client problems. Do you want to solve, do you want to optimize for that, or do you want to optimize for small client problems? Both could be correct for you at your stage in your career. It's a variety of factors. It's your skill, your earning potential, what kind of problem you want to solve for. And I would say in addition to that also, it would be skill, earning potential, what kind of problem you want to solve for, and yeah, like what's your temperament more suited to? You know, do you prefer to do, what part of the job do you prefer to do?
Makes sense. I think a lot of people need to really listen to this one because they're just ever confused, especially when they're in agency also. And of course, agency gives them fast growth, which is something that they can always consider. What's one of the most ignored streams of digital marketing that has a great career growth or you think has a massive impact on business?
I think one of the great ignored streams of digital marketing is the tech deployment. You know, I think there are lots of IT people coming into digital marketing. So if you understand the principles of digital marketing and you can do strong tech deployment, and that means you could do like a CMS deployment, or you could do a marketing automation deployment, or you could do a CDP deployment, you could bring, or you could do like, a bot training, AI training, as in not training or teaching others, but training the AI to be more effective for the organization. The effectively all of the prompt engineering stuff that you can do. And, you know, you also look at the whole data analytics side. So if you can bring a bit of the prompt engineering, data analytics, and an understanding of systems with the marketing perspective,
right,
to marketing, I think that is a untapped area of growth for this industry, because that's going to be the back end which powers all of these personalization experiences.
Right. I think we do see that when we teach students marketing automation and AI, they get to see good opportunities coming on the way, because there's a huge demand for it in the market.
Yeah.
And not everybody understands it.
So effectively, the people who are learning, you know, I think both sides, if you're learning the media side, which is you're learning the funnel work, and if you're learning on the optimization side of advertising, then you need to have an equally strong understanding of marketing automation, because that is the top funnel is what you're bringing people in for. And then middle and bottom funnel is what that is really tightening, the marketing automation work. So you need to know a bit of both. And equally, if you're on the messaging side and you're on the creative side, then you may be writing creative which brings in people through the top funnel, but how do I be consistent across the journey? That is what you'll be able to say what the possibilities are because of marketing automation.
Amazing. In a digital marketing agency, what does it take for someone to grow faster? What are some of the qualities you see in a candidate to grow them?
So what are the qualities it takes for somebody to grow faster? I think one is, and you know, because there are multiple kind of profiles, but I'll try to generalize across all. One is the ability to meet KPIs. I think that's the first and foremost thing. So I'll tell you in our system what we are moving towards. One is that we are tracking KPIs for every client. At every client level, if you can consistently hit the KPIs, you move faster. Second is that we are tracking client satisfaction scores and net promoter scores of every client. So the better you can be at managing expectations of the client on satisfaction levels and score levels, you move forward. Third is that if you can bring some kind of a innovation on new technology deployment or implementation, which has a impact on the KPIs, that is the third thing that we are looking at. Fourth thing that we are looking at is a peer review or a manager review. So if you're a manager, then what your team is rating you at, and if you're a working in a team, what your peers are rating at. So are you great to be able to work with? Do people like working under you? Do you consistently meet your KPIs? Are you, you know, able to deliver satisfaction to clients? And then in general, are you, you know, hitting, is your collective of people hitting their commercial target set? So that, and then if I break down the KPIs, we look at the KPIs on, you know, variety of factors. So the KPIs for a marketing automation person would be things like open rate, you know, your click to open rate, you know, the number of notification opens that are there. So those would be the kind of KPIs that might be there for marketing automation. For tech, it might be like load speed, it might be the ANR rate, it may be the crash rate, you know, so those things might be your KPIs there. And for the creative side, your KPIs will be typically benchmark to, you know, your engagement rate, your average reel view, your, you know, average time duration spent on video. So all of these variety of subject matter KPIs in addition to client satisfaction. So subject matter KPI, client satisfaction KPI, peer or team satisfaction KPI, and your ability to hit the business targets. Those are the four fundamentals, and you can, you know, double click on each of these.
So you set goals, you give them numbers with respect to this. Wow.
Yeah. So that is something that we've been doing now for the last 1.5 years. And that's the whole way we've engineered the system of the agency, because we have a central team which is basically doing the annual business planning. And then they are also the business intelligence team of the whole agency, which basically sets the goals and numbers for each, effectively each client, each department, each person.
Nice.
And then all of it lands up to the organizational KPI.
Wow. This is, I think, one of the strongest system in an agency business. This is something that I would like to learn from you personally, Harshal.
Thank you. So yeah, that's also the other thing is that, you know, that is the only way to really scale up. Because if you have a KPI-driven structure, then you can basically build a strong engine to be able to scale up.
Absolutely. I think one of my biggest question, one of the questions for the later was, what's the tip to scale up an agency? I think I've already got the answers here. But I'll ask you those questions again, sure. Considering there'll be a lot more things that you would like to add. You hire many digital marketers. What has been one of the most unique applications that blowed your mind?
One of the most unique applications. I think there was one guy who sent in, I don't remember exactly what he did, but he sent like one shoe. And then he said that, you know, these are big shoes to fill. It was something like that. Wait, let me just remember it. Like, he gave a shoe, he sent one shoe. And he said that, you know, this is something to do with, I've sent you one foot and I'm here to take the next foot forward, lies when I walk in, or something like that. So it was interesting.
Wow, that's cool. That's super creative.
Yeah, it's creative. It was creative.
Have you ever recruited a candidate because they built a rapport with you on social media?
No.
Not yet.
No, it doesn't. Like, because the recruitment has to be a bit more systemized. So you'll have to go through the recruitment process. And typically, I mean, now when I'm managing the team, I'm, for my reports, I'm usually recruiting on the basis, and these would be people with like close to, you know, 12 to 18 years of experience. I'm typically recruiting on the basis of their past experience on what they've delivered. And I'm recruiting on the basis of references that they have on the market and, you know, really the impact they've had on the business. And then there is, you know, how well is the fit between us. So at a junior level, if somebody's trying to like build a rapport on social media and thinking that it may lead to something, chances are not, because also that rapport building, usually sometimes it becomes a little surface level. You know, it's just like, hey, I like your work, it's damn good. So that is not going to give me a signal that, look, actually that person is worth hiring. The person is worth hiring on the basis of the test that we have. And then there's the interview round. And we are like, you know, sometimes we got bashed recently on LinkedIn. Your test is too hard. We made it too long, not too hard. It's too long. Too long is a challenge, but too hard is something that I won't have a problem with, because if the test is hard, it's okay. It only brings the best people inside.
True. The stringent, the recruitment process, the best people you hire.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Someone who wants to start a digital marketing agency, which is the usual trend of someone quitting an agency and starting a new one. What's your biggest advice to them?
I would say have an anchor client. Have the first three clients that you know you're going to get. And then be very clear what your differentiation is going to be. If you're going to be yet another agency, then there's no point setting it up, to be honest. I mean, the market is a tough market right now. It's like inundated with lots of service providers. So what is your differentiator going to be? What's your reason to exist? And how is your service delivery going to be significantly better, and which actually solves a client pain point? And then you need to have your first three clients outlined. Right. In addition to that, I would say also build the first year business plan month by month. How many clients on each month? And how many net new clients on each month? At what price? Therefore, how many people? So build that out.
Cool. So basically, you're trying to say that we need to be measuring every single element of acquiring a client and how many people we need to hire. So the cost is all.
Yeah, so you have a good idea of the cost, how much, you know, what investment you need to put. And you also need to have a good idea. So you need to have, like, I mean, I guess three things. One is your plan needs to be tight in the sense that your exact cost investment and your exact revenue month on month that you're going to get, because that's going to be important. Second is you need to have a key differentiator or a reason to exist, which positions you differently from the marketplace. And that key differentiator needs to actually solve problems that brands are facing with existing agencies.
Makes sense. How does one scale up a digital marketing agency? I think you gave one of the tip already. What are your top three steps? Like, what would you suggest? Like, somebody who was stuck, let's say they've been running agency for 7 years or 8 years or 10 years. I've seen most of the agency owners are stuck in their journey.
Yeah.
But they don't know how to scale up from where they are to how they can scale up to a next level.
See, the scale up or the growth is on the back of winning new business, which is the biggest challenge that most agencies face today. See, there's no easy way to answer this question, because if somebody's stuck, you have to empathize at 7 years if you're, you know, you've got a certain size and you're not able to scale beyond that, then there is an enrichment required in the product of what you're selling. Fundamentally. And that is a reality all of us have to face, you know, including if I'm stopping to grow, the signal is that what I'm selling to the market, the other person is not finding valuable enough to buy beyond a certain threshold. So how can I enrich my product? And that is customized to everybody at every different journey. So how do I enrich what I'm trying to sell? If I'm trying to make films, or if I am making films, how do I enrich that film quality? If I am selling a social media services package, how do I enrich the level of creativity in that? If I'm selling marketing automation, how do I further, in, you know, kind of increase that? So I think first is to take a step back and evaluate how can I enrich my product by looking at competition and by looking at, you know, also the best brands, how they are managed. So that will give us an idea that, okay, this is where my framework is. And then once I have tightened my offering, then how do I execute on that offering simultaneously is something that the client needs to have confidence about. And then you go out and pitch.
Makes sense. I think first get the systems right and stronger is what you're trying to say before.
Yeah, but again, that's again a very vague, some people might find it a vague answer, not an easy answer, but that's the truth. That's the harsh
truth
to work on.
Absolutely true, because majority of people think opening an office in a new city is scaling up. What's your thought there?
Opening office in a new city is challenging. It's, you know, I think in all the cities in India, there is enough business for at least, I would say, 10 to 12,000 people per city office to exist.
Wow.
There's enough business for that much. So I think growing in one city is also not a bad thing.
Makes sense.
And then, yeah, then you're capping one city out, you can look at another city. But there's enough business in the market overall.
Right. You're saying first be the king of your city and then think of other territories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, because working in building new city offices, there is a whole aspect of diffusion of the culture. How do you diffuse a culture into a new city? How do you kind of make sure that the systems and processes that you've built are consistent between cities?
Mm.
How do you ensure that generally also I get a lot of, like, you know, feedback that sometimes the other cities are not looked at as favorites because the home city is more of the founder's time and spent focus on. So those are some of the challenges that one may see.
Lovely. Good thoughts there. Shabang started in 2015 and we see this has grown really faster in 8 years. What's the secret of growth?
I think, you know, we have these principles that we write down, which we try to follow as much as possible. I'm not saying we are the best adherence to that in the market, but definitely our focus on making sure that clients' business wins, we win. So there is a furious focus on making clients' businesses win. And there is that DNA that, you know, everything that we do is to make sure that the clients' business win. Second is that one of our big spurts that we got known for was something we pioneered called everyday creativity. So everyday creativity was talking about saying, okay, you know, actually what client is hiring us for is to inject creativity in the bloodstream of their whole organization. So every piece that I put out, how can I inject everyday creativity? Now that is then moving on the tech side with delight in every interaction, and similarly on the media side. So really core single fundamentals, which then are relentlessly driven towards the whole ecosystem, is the second thing that I would say. So this whole clients, business wins, we win, and the corresponding principles, this principle of everyday creativity, all the principles are listed on the website. Part of the principles also we have is, you know, this whole thing, which is our word, is our bond. So it's easy to do business with us, relatively easy to do business with us. It's flowy. You know, the demand is quite, you know, quite adhered to. So one is a principle. Second is this focus on injecting everyday creativity, and subsequently now the interaction and every delight and so on and so forth. And the third is, I think that we've been fortunate to, so word is our bond is part of the principles. We've been fortunate that we've got a good pool of talent that chooses to, you know, work here. So we've got a strong employer brand. We've got a innovation of DNA, you know, innovation DNA inside of everything that we do. So the best people want to come to work here, and the building of that brand, I think, is the third thing that we've really focused on. So the principles,
the creativity,
and the, you know, kind of the initiatives to drive, you know, focused agendas for clients. Third is the best talent coming in place. Fourth is now the systems-driven approach is something that has really helped us, because we were very early on, we made sure that in the second or third year, we started giving people commercial targets to hit, split by business lead, split by, you know, business units. And now that's gotten even more refined as we've gone along. So that's the other thing that has helped us.
Wow. Cool. Harshal, in 2 years, Shebang almost tripled the team size. Like, you had about 315 people in 2020.
Yeah.
Almost 1,200 people now, maybe more.
Yeah.
Did COVID magically help you scale?
You know, this part is something that is quite, it sounds glamorous, but COVID came with a share of problems for us. So it magically helped us scale, because obviously more people decided to spend more money on digital. And as a workforce, we were more agile remote workforce. So we were first to be able to, you know, work with online systems well. You know, our teams were able to collaborate well. So the clients saw that that is what is showing through in the pitches. And that led to a lot of new business. Now, from 315, when we scaled to 1,200 people, our systems were not strong enough to be able to handle the load of 1,200 people at the same systems that were managing 315 people. So we had some breaks. Now, we had a few clients leave us also as a result of that. There was some attrition on clients. There was a lot of attrition on people. People were not satisfied because the people systems could not hold 1,200 people when we were at, you know, versus at 315. Same systems which were built for 315 are the same system that are managing 1,200 people. So, net-net, what happened last, we had the year of 2022, which was actually a break year for us, not a make year for us. So we had a lot of growth. And then 2020 through 2022, we had to break a lot of things. And 2023, we've had actually a very good year to rebuild the systems of the company to be able to handle the 1,200 people. Now, going up to even more than 1,200 people, that I'm sure these systems can now handle close to 2,000 to 2,500 people. So COVID was definitely good for us in the sense of market demand came, we pitched well, we got business. But at the same time, our organizational design needed to scale, which we weren't able to scale at the same pace. Three major things we did. One is we divided the company into multiple small business units, or strategic business units, SBUs that we called them. Within SBUs, we had multidisciplinary functions functioning within the same SBU. So in the same SBU, you'll have, if it's a creative SBU, you will have account planning, you will have servicing, you'll have creative, all and art, all within the same SBU. If you're in tech, then you'll have your project manager, your technical manager, your coders, and your UI UX all within the same SBU. So we started forming different SBUs. Each of these SBUs became roughly 80 to 100 people each. Then we started really, you know, what were the problems that we had? Actually very basic problems. So I can't even tell you that kuch, you know, some jadoo we did. Our problems were that we didn't have a stringent system to control over hiring. So we put systems in place for that, because we suddenly started exploding in terms of like, you know, the we suddenly started exploding business. We also started exploding in number of people joining the organization.
Right.
So if I had to be very honest with you, when we were at the end of 2022, almost 1,200 people, I think we were 800, we were to be 850 people.
Mm.
We were roughly 350 people too many. As a result of that, your controls and your cost management is a challenge. So we basically put strong controls for that. That now we do, you know, there are a few things we measure at our quarterly business reviews, which we are going into next week. So every quarter, we are managing and we are measuring our 3-4 things. One is we set out a business plan at the start of the year. Where are we against that business plan? Not just in terms of new business won, but also in terms of team size budgeted for and salary budget deployed. So at the business level, we are measuring that. Then we are measuring how much is our shortfall, how much is the gap that we have to cover. So there, each of the SBUs has that intelligence data given by a central team. They don't have to do that. They are given all that data. Then we are measuring the scope versus delivery of the client. So if the client has given us a scope of 100 pieces, have we delivered 100? Have we delivered 102? Have we delivered 120? Have we delivered 140? So we see the variance. Where there is lesser delivered, it's a red flag for us. So that also helps us track and see at a client level where we are not delivering up to the mark. Then we are able to track, you know, KPI or engagement score, or, you know, we spoke about those different kind of services having different KPIs. So we track those KPIs in the quarter business review. So if the KPI is below the benchmark or is below the industry average, again, red flag. So you have measures for red flag coming in. Have you not given scope enough to the client? That's a red flag. Have you not delivered on your KPIs? That's a red flag. Then we are measuring the CSAT, client satisfaction. We are measuring the net promoter score. So is your client satisfaction low? You know, which is lower than what it's supposed to be. Is your net promoter score actually poor? That's a red flag. So, and then there's a few other metrics like the overall team mood score, because we also use AI to measure the mood score of every team. Then the pitch conversion rate, how many pitches did each team do and what is the conversion rate on those pitches? You know, what is the award conversion rate? How many awards did you apply for? How many did you win? So it's actually a whole bunch of metrics that we are tracking, and also we are tracking attrition. So how many people left your team and what is the average attrition of the company? Are you way above, way below? So all of these metrics actually help the manager stay in control of the business, the head of the SBU to stay in control of the business. So if they're then in control of the business, then there are lesser chances of you falling into a risky situation where your business becomes a bit more, you know, kind of starts shaking. So those are the things that we are now building into the organization to make it very resilient and very, you know, like while we can continue our growth, we have grown well this year also, 35% growth. We have a lot of inquiries which we convert the pitches. So again, like I said, we track the pitch conversion rate. We track very carefully the pipeline that we have. So we do all of these things, but now we are just making sure that whatever we get, we don't lose at all.
Really deep insights there. Thank you. So what does a Shebang digital marketing pitch look like? What goes in that winning presentation?
Okay, so the pitch usually typically starts with ABC. So A is audience, second is a brand, and third is a category. Or actually in the form of ACB. So audience, category, and brand. But like we say ABC and then we reorient the ACB. So audience typically will look at, like, you know, for the brand, what is the audience exactly? Like, we then go under the skin of the audience. Typically in the pitch, we will do audience interviews. We will go and do focus groups. We will go and, you know, scan social conversations. We will scan what people are saying about the particular, you know, that particular audience on e-commerce website, what reviews they are talking about. Then we will crunch, you know, 12, 13,000 reviews together and use AI to come with the commonalities of that audience, like what is it that they're really looking after. So we have a really good sense of the audience, because normally a client will buy your service when they know that you understand the audience very well. That's one part of it. Second, your client will buy your service when they know you understand their brand very well. So the second part will be brand, where we will decode not just the brief, but what we understand of the brand. And, like, you know, what are the you know, like visual guidelines, what do they say, what is the brand personality, what is the brand archetype, you know, like what does that particular brand, you know, like how according to us, what is the equity of the brand, you know, what are the consumers saying about the brand, what are the most words used when referred to the brand, what is the current image versus the desired image. So that's the second part, which is the brand. And third is the category. So what is the competition doing? What are the trends in the category? How much is the competition spending versus you? You know, like then, yeah, effectively those kind of things. How much is the how much is the category growing by? So a lot of annual reports, a lot of financial reports, we will study on the basis of that. So that gives us a good understanding of category. That category is, you know, how is the sale happening in the category? Who is it, through dealers? Is it retailers, distributors, e-commerce? Who is the most dominant channel? What is a big trigger for consumer purchase within that category? So all that we'll put down in the ABC. And then that is finally put together to identify the problem. And then the pitch has the solution to the problem.
Creative solutions.
Creative.
Strategic media, solution. Tech, yeah, fantastic. That's nice. That's a really good one. It always takes that one big client to scale the agency. How did Shabang back the first big digital marketing client? Something that changed the game of organization.
So our philosophy from day one has been that no single client should be that big to dictate the fortunes of the agency. So our first client that we had, we were fortunate that we had a client, Finolex Pipes. And second client, we had Godrej Industries. Both these clients were very strong legacy names that gave a very strong trust to the market, to other big companies that they can also work with us. So I would say that the more legacy names you can get behind you and tough players and long-lasting players in the market you can get to work with you, and if they can give you their testimonial or credibility, then that's a good way to grow the agency. I think anchoring on one client alone is a risky strategy.
Legacy brands is what you're saying is the way to go forward.
I mean, and legacy brands work for us. Now, in today's market, you could choose that I want to be tuned for funded brands, or I want to be tuned for family managed brands, or I want to be tuned for like, small scale going to medium scale. So you can choose a particular niche because there are so many different niches. We chose this particular niche because we felt that we were best suited for it. Plus, it would be profitable in the long run. Plus, we'd be able to maintain certain kind of pricing and build the team a certain way. But each kind of client, I would say, try to own a certain DNA of client. Like family managed business, I think, for example, is not very well managed in India today. You know, regional players, if you say talk about South specific agency, that is not, you know, we don't have an undisputed king on that. So each of the regions of India also needs to have an undisputed king. And then you'll talk about, that small scale to medium, basically agencies go like companies which are 10 crore turnover going to 100 crore turnover. How well can you serve them? So each one has a, I think each market niche of India can have an agency leader.
Good thoughts there. I think some really great insights with respect to how do we go figure out niches with respect, not just the categorization of the industry, but how much they're earning, like the way you said, family managed businesses. So I think there's a lot of these deeper work that you guys have done to figure out which industry or who are we chasing in the market. Yeah. That's amazing. So Shabang in London, Dubai and Amsterdam, I think.
Dubai is no. We are not yet in Dubai.
I do see that on the website that we have mentioned Amsterdam timing and the Dubai timing.
So Dubai timing, we want to be in Dubai soon.
Yeah, so we are aspiring to be there. Yes. Fine. I'm so proud to see an Indian digital marketing agency becoming an MNC, which is very unlikely to happen. What's our goal and why didn't we partner with someone? Why on our own?
Okay. So goal is very simple and very clear. In this business, the global players are either French, you can say Havas, Publicis. They are either American, Omnicom. They are either British, WPP, S4. They are either Japanese, Dentsu, Hakuhodo. There is no major Indian player which has a presence across the world, which has India as a headquarters, which uses the best of Indian creativity, skill and talent and ingenuity to deliver to clients all over the world. So our mission very early on was we said, stated out saying that we will be from India to the world and bring the best of the creative talent in the world to India. And that is a mission that we are on. I said this statement in 2017-18 when we were hardly a 150 member team. And that has helped to keep going forward. Right now also we are small speck to where we want to be. So we will keep going. Why we are choosing to do this by ourselves versus without a partner? Because per se the industry functions in a way where you hardly ever partner with somebody. You either get bought by them. So you need to run agency with a clear vision on where you want to be. There are many of my peers who have decided to sell their agencies and cashed out.
Right. I think most of them take the track in Mumbai is what I see.
Yeah, yeah. Which is good. It's, there's no problem with that. But I think I'm very clear that we are here to stay for the longer haul. Okay. And we will build this out over the next 20-25 years, this India to the world.
So we're not building it up to be acquired. We're here to serve.
Yeah, we won't be acquired, no.
Fantastic. That's some great clarity there. So, you know, you were talking about pitching. So what's our average retainers like? How much do we charge a client here in Mumbai or across the country?
Okay, so minimum retainership across services starts about 3 lakh rupees a month.
Okay.
And goes up to, let's say, 18 to 20 lakh rupees a month.
Okay.
And then the size of the team that is put into that differs between each of these pricing.
Fantastic. Of many verticals that you have, which is the vertical that gives you the maximum revenue?
So in terms of absolute gross revenue, it would be our digital creative services, which give us the maximum, you know, revenue. And I'm counting revenue that stays in with us. Okay, let's break it down this way. In terms of maximum gross revenue, it is a media buying and planning business because we are buying and planning space for clients on Google, Facebook, programmatic, what have you. So that's the highest volume. Highest in terms of net volume is our digital creative business. So that is, when I mean net is net of third-party costs, what stays at home. So that's the highest is the digital creative business, and the highest margin is on our tech business.
Wow. Okay. Super. So Shebang recently tied up with Masu Meenawala for starting Shebang Maximize.
Yeah.
How is this talent management initiative different from others?
So, you know, coming back to the point which we spoke about niches.
I could connect to that point.
Specific niches that we are going in with talent management. Right. One is we are very, very clear on luxury and on super premium because Masu Meenawala comes with that, you know, that heritage.
Right.
So a lot of the people that we represent are on that end of the spectrum. We have Anaita Shroff Adajania who we represent. She's, you know, the authority when it comes to fashion in India. So we have also the likes of Roshni Chopra, likes of Shivani Bafna, who are all represented because they're right at the top of the spectrum when it comes to premium, when it comes to luxury, when it comes to, you know, acing at the top of Indian aesthetic values. And there's a second set of spectrum that we call the mass Indian creators, which we are building, which we should see more and more of now. Some of the people we have on that, you know, we have people like Cyberzeal, who's got a crazy following on his YouTube channel and on his Instagram. I think the fastest Indian to hit 2 million followers on Instagram. So we have people like him. And then we have people who actually straddle between these two spectrums. So, you know, Isha Talwar from Mirzapur, you know, she is also one of the talents that we represent. She can easily fit as a very high-end luxury creator, she also fits into mass. So we are able to kind of bring, you know, these two segments together. And that is what we are really focusing on. In terms of service delivery and skill set also is something that we are doing a constant process refining on. As you can tell, in our DNA is a bit of process-driven agency. Yeah. So that process-driven to talent management is also something that we are bringing. And the ability to have a razor-sharp focus on analytics for the talents to be able to use that to grow.
Super. So is this very luxury-focused or you say no, it's also for mass?
At this point in time, it is more luxury-focused. We are building our mass offering as well.
Super. Fantastic. 1.3 years. That's the average tenure of a Shebang employee as per LinkedIn. What do you do to overcome attrition, which is one of the industry's biggest challenge?
Okay, good. So, you know, it was 7 months a few months back.
Wow.
It's gone up to 1.3 years. I'm happy to hear that, which is a good sign for us. So we've been doing a few things right. But obviously with 1.3 years, we are not doing too many things right. So there's areas that we are working on. I think one of the main things we have to really work on, and not just us, but whole industry has to work on, is compensation. So most people leave because of compensation related issues. Second, most people leave is because their manager is not good. You know, they feel like manager is not invested in their growth. These are the two main reasons from net-net what I've understood why people leave an organization. I'm not getting paid enough and my manager is not
good
enough. So what we've started doing, two or three things. Actually, I'm very happy to hear this growth of the average tenure. But we started doing two or three things which have helped. First is we use an AI called Infido across our organization, where we are constantly tracking the mood of every person in the organization. And we are constantly having a chat with every person in the organization. So Infido is able to identify individuals who are people we need to meet, what they identify as PTM. So people to meet is what then our HR really focuses on to stem those people in terms of attrition, because either they're not satisfied or they're not happy with few things. So HR can go in and swoop and understand, you know, this, like, okay, let's have a conversation. Let's understand what's troubling you. So that's the first thing that stems attrition at one level. And in addition to that, we are also, because we are so KPI driven, or like turning to be more of a KPI driven organization, if somebody's at risk of leaving and their KPIs are very good, then that prioritizes for HR that, okay, hyper focus on retaining this person. If somebody's a PTM but their KPIs are extremely poor, then that means we can be a little bit more, you know, maybe actually the person is not a right fit for organization. So that's one thing that we're doing. Second is that we are taking again very seriously the MSAT, Manager Satisfaction Surveys, which are currently ongoing inside our organizations to understand which managers, and managers are then given feedback on different scores, like how fair are they, you know, how much time they're investing in people, you know, how much are they able to build a career growth. So they're given scores across what their team perceives of for them. So that allows the managers also to get better. So one is, if we can identify the PTM who are out to leave, then we can see if their KPIs and scores are very good, if comp can solve that. And second is generally upskilling the levels of manager.
Fantastic. So what if you see a manager's score is really less? You fire them?
Yeah.
Tech integrations, metaverse, NFTs, AI, CGI.
Yeah.
What are some of the most important changes one needs to bring in the agency lifestyle, and what did we do?
All of these. I mean, we have examples on all. Like, if you talk about a metaverse, then we built the Coffeeverse for Britannia.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Examples of that. So there's a built on Spatial, an entire Coffeeverse built on bringing all the Britannia products which are to do with coffee in one place. You know, spearheaded by Biscafe, which is coffee in a cracker. So that whole bit was built. CGI, we were one of the early movers with Perfetti Van Mill, and Britannia was again a big CGI mover.
I saw that on your feed.
Yeah, so the milk bikini is going across the whirly ceiling, or, you know, there's a big tennis ball right in the middle of a field. So we were one of the early adopters on CGI as well, that we saw has led to greater retention rates, higher watch through rates, higher shares. So that's the second thing that is there. Then using design in AI is something that we do, you know, it's almost like a DNA that we do. So there again, Britannia was one of the most visible ones with respect to building the biscuit world out of AI. And then, you know, we have some good work on Crompton, we have good work on Geo, on utilization of AI. Using AI for, you know, other aspects also, the Geo VIP box is something that we built during last year's IPL, where you have video AI. So you're, you know, like you have each of the players, like Virat Kohli was able to send you a personalized
message
video taking your name, you know, taking certain parameters that he could
rephrase.
Yeah, like a rephrase kind of equivalent. We didn't use rephrase in that. It's a homegrown Geo technology which was built. That was also used. So I think basically you have to be ahead of the curve on everything and be first to market on everything. That's the only way to stay ahead in this game.
This is like as a digital marketing agency owner, this is like Prabhuji, aapke charan ka hai moment for me. Because I think I think a lot of people are still stuck doing the same old practices. Mm. And I think innovation is where the differentiation is. The innovation is where the wow factor for a client is too.
Yeah. Yeah. See, the client always buying you or your service because they want to be ahead of the market's curve.
Right.
So we have to be ahead of the market's curve. Or we have to be the first at the edge of the curve because that is why the client is wanting to associate with you. So that is what we have to bring to the table. And, you know, like I, right now, Touchwood, we are able to do it. I hope we can keep doing it. That's the DNA we are building.
Touchwood, and personally very motivated by this. Yeah, God bless. Shabang created AI bots as assistants. Now, what does that mean?
Okay, so the AI bots were serving two purposes. One was to even just tell the whole agency that, look, you know, take on AI. You know, use it as your ally. Because first people were like, oh, can I, you know, is it going to replace me? Things like that. So we said, no, you're... try it. So we personalize AI bots. Now, what do these, you know, these close to 15 AI bots that we've built in-house for, I mean, a prompt engineer, not even built, but what are the different functions that they do? So one bot can be used to get feedback on a caption like a client is giving it. Second, you can do, you know, you feed in your customer and your customer profile, and it gives you even more details on that customer profile. Third is that, you know, it can help you with email writing. So different aspects of the kind of like, you know, your workflow, which these bots are as your allies on it. So when we launched it to the workforce also, we launched it as, you know, 15 new joinees, 17 new joinees who have joined the organization as extra hands for you. Mm. One does data crunching and analytics. So things like that. So different aspects of the job they do.
Lovely. How do you identify second in line leaders inside a digital marketing agency?
I think more and more is becoming clear to me. It's around the KPIs. So the everything I told you around the KPIs, which is if the, you know, if the operational KPIs are strong, if the management, if the manager satisfaction scores are strong, if the client satisfaction scores are strong, and your ability to meet targets are there, those are your basic second level.
Right. From post to reel, the whole social media marketing structure has streamlined to short videos. Mm. How did we bring this change in the agency?
It's tough, man. It's like, you know, it's a whole DNA has to change. Like today also, I'll tell you, like one of the things that we are not succeeding at is that if you still go to the Shebang Instagram feed, you will see roughly 6 out of 10 posts are still, you know, like non-reel. So we are doing different things for that. You know, we are changing the team composition. In many of the teams, we are infusing a video editor plus a videographer as part of the, you know, retainer structure creative team. Second is that we are giving ample space. Now we have one more new office coming up. So in that we'll be having, you know, we already have a video studio in which we are recording here. We will be having 2 more video studios, 2 more photo studios in the offices. So ample space and avenues for creation, equipment. You know, so those are the things that we are doing to enable people to be able to create more video.
I think this is some deep insight all the agency owners should possibly learn and bring that change, because I think this is one of the biggest challenges the industry is facing right now. What was Shabang?
Also, like, you know, the thing is that the other thing that, we are not yet successful, I'll just tell you what I'm trying to tell the teams to do is to think less like brands, to think more like creators.
Right.
So, you know, in that category, if you're in the beauty category, see the last 15 reels that have really popped and try to understand, see what consumers are saying from that, and then see like how the brand can pop reels also. Like we have to think of ourselves as, you know, like people who are able to create popping content.
Create viral content, they're just creating content.
Yeah.
Fantastic. What was Shabang's revenue last year and what are we projecting this year?
Last year, we were give or take 200 crores. What we are projecting this year... you will take 250.
Fantastic. If you are starting Shabang from scratch today, which core services would you prioritize offering first and why?
If I am starting today, then I would go with an AI-first approach, AI-first agency.
Hmm.
That would give me an entry into the market. I think today, whoever is entering and is able to master the AI game, I would do prompt engineering, custom bots for clients. I would set up like, you know, dashboards where... they can feed in all their old creatives and just put prompts and new creatives come out, linked to all the old creatives. I would create a analytics AI engine on top of all the analytics that they have. I would do AI trainings. So I would use AI the way 2008, social media, 2024, AI. There's a second real, it's this real dense shift that has come in the market.
I think my younger brother Rishi is going to be very, very happy because he's like the AI pro in the office. So just some personal questions to you. Who inspires you the most in life?
I don't know if I have like one, honestly. Like there's many.
Fantastic. You want to name one? If you, whatever on top of your mind.
The first name that is coming, no, there is no like immediate first name that's coming to the top of my head. I would say, like, yeah, I'm inspired. Like, I've read a lot of his work, Howard Schultz's work on building Starbucks. So I like the way he's built the culture of Starbucks. Like, you know, just out of reading. Richard Branson, again, I would be inspired by. Definitely, I'm very inspired. Like, again, he's leagues ahead of, you know, like one of the most genius minds, I think, living alive today is Mukesh Ambani. So Mukesh Dhirubhai Ambani, in terms of just the way he is envisioned such a large multifarious empire with so many different industries built, and within that the amount of capital he's deployed with discipline, I mean, that is actually, I would say he's at the top of the list, and you know, the others would follow.
Fantastic. Social media makes people anxious. Do you believe in that?
Yeah, because actually you'll be surprised, the attention span of a human is now less than a goldfish.
True.
So the goldfish was supposed to be the most distracted. 9 seconds.
Human is 8 seconds.
So we are now more distracted than the most distracted animal. And hence, anxiety. I think social media, because I'm distracted, I'm looking at one thing, then I'm looking at the other, then I'm constantly comparing my life. So I can get anxious.
Fantastic. What's one of the biggest mistakes you have made as a leader?
The biggest mistake, I think, indexing for too much unrealistic growth. So, and not having systems to manage that growth. So the whole story I spoke to you about the 2022 year, trying to grow too fast, not having the systems imploding in terms of systems not being there, so overhiring. I think that's my biggest.
Amazing. What's with your new avatar?
New avatar is... I think it's three things. One is I'm building an Indian company. So I stand proudly Indian, I dress proudly Indian. Second is that it's very comfortable and it suits the weather of the cities I'm mostly spending my time in. And generally I've been moving towards a more minimal approach in life. It's minimal.
Right. You and Akshay both are very spiritually inclined. How has it impacted and helped business?
Spiritually inclined, I think, helps you really build the business with a larger purpose, because you can serve, if the intent is to serve maximum people, then that is how you can build the business.
Fantastic. What's the best advice you've ever heard?
The best advice I ever got is that the answer to all problems in any business is growth. So keep growing.
Beautiful. What needs to change in the Indian education system?
Lot is already changing right now, so I should preface that. Indian education system is getting more and more real-time, more demanding. So in the sense that it's more close to industry as possible. There is also a lot more people from industry collaborating with the Indian education system. Particularly, I can talk about the bachelor's, master's level. I think there, certainly, there's a lot more industry collaboration and is more tuned to new to market. So I think that is already moving at some pace. There's a lot of heavy investment in that space. I don't know enough right now about, up to standard 10. So I can't comment on the education system as a whole up to standard 10. I do interact with the institutions which are more in the bachelor's, master's. So I think that is moving in the right direction.
What inspires you the most about Gen Z?
Oh, I think like what inspires me about Gen Z is that Gen Z is, I think, the most expressive generation that we have seen in our times. You know, the ability to create so many different kinds of like deep, meaningful messages at all levels. It's the most feeling-oriented generation also that we've seen. Like, I think millennials think from here, Gen Z thinks from here. So, it's a very, like, yeah, it's a... And they've grown up on the digital device. So, they're able to connect this and this really well. to create lots of crazy stuff. Like, I think, you know, I mean, take, for example, like one example of Gen Z's creative artistic expression is Yashraj Mukhate. So, you know, the ability to make music like this and then turn it around to mean something else is what is him.
True. I think it's crazy to see them do that. Last question. What are the top three books that you recommend to someone?
One is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. If you're building a business, so Hard Thing About Hard Things is a very, very good book to read. Second is, if you're building any business or you're doing any kind of marketing, How to Speak to the Consumer is a book called The Mom's Test. So very interesting book on how to speak to consumers and how to get insights from consumers. That's the second thing I would say. Third, I would say, if you want to understand life, then you study the Bhagavad Gita.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Harshal. It was a pleasure hosting you today. I'm sure this is going to be of a great, it's going to be like the Bible podcast for agency owners. And there's a lot of insights. Personally, I've learned a lot. So thank you for teaching me a lot today.
Thank you.
So I'm sure you learned a lot in this podcast as much as I did. You know, it's always great to learn from an agency owner because every agency learns differently. And even if you take one deep insight from them and you implement it in your agency business, you can actually grow that. And not just an agency, you can even try that as an entrepreneur. When you go and meet an entrepreneur and you learn from them, you can actually take one of their ideas and implement it in your business. It's always good to learn from people who are successful and also good to learn from their failures so that you don't repeat them. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Do share your thoughts in the comment section and let me know who would you like me to invite on my podcast next.